This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
Well, we are at war, and I'm not very happy about it. We told you on this show, we predicted, I should say, on this show after the election in November that we would go to war in Iraq. It was only a matter of Karl Rove and the Bush administration getting the backing they needed with Republican majorities in the U.S. Congress. I think that all this futzing around in the U.N. has been to make it look good. The Bush administration has lost some credibility in arguing along the way that, oh, yeah, we've got the votes. We're not going to get any vetoes. But, of course, again, we told you on this program that it looked pretty clear that there was no way they were going to get past the three vetoes of either France or China or Russia. And they were not going to get the five votes out of the temporary members of the UN Security Council. So we decided to go it alone. Apparently, the administration is not going to heed the advice of someone who was part of the administration back in 91, who, in writing about it in retrospect, said the following. Going in and occupying Iraq, thus unilaterally exceeding the United Nations mandate, would have destroyed the precedent of international response to aggression that we hoped to establish. Had we gone the invasion route, the United States could conceivably still be an occupying power in a bitterly hostile land. It would have been a dramatically different and perhaps barren outcome. That was written in 1998 by former President George Herbert Walker Bush and his national security advisor, Brent Scowcroft. Apparently, they decided to not heed those words. Joining us a little later in today's show, we are pleased to announce, will be Gary Chu. You've heard him on Capital Public Radio. He has done movie reviews for them. And in our third segment today, when we try to get a little bit lighter than some of the heavy fare we're going to deal with, we're going to talk a little bit about Oscars and Razzies. With us now is Steve Valentino.
Good evening, Doug.
Now, Steve, you're going to be talking to us in the second segment about the coverage that you provided us and KDVS.
At the Democratic Convention, there's a lot of interesting things that went on there, and I hope to provide some insight on it for
our
listeners. Well,
I'm looking forward to discussing that in our second segment. We've got a lot of foreign policy things to rant about, so buckle your safety belt, and let's just go for the ride here, shall we?
Strapped in.
I would like to start with something unusual. The Marilyn Vos Savant column, which comes from Parade Magazine, the weekly insert, which is in most newspapers across this country. Marilyn was asked the following question, which I thought was worthy of some discussion. Nick in Baltimore, Maryland, asked her, "Do you trust the officials of our federal government to tell us the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?" To which Marilyn, supposedly the smartest woman in the world with an IQ of something like 200, said, "Nearly all of the time I trust them to tell us the truth," meaning they will not lie in response to a question, though they may decline to answer at least directly. "But I trust them not to tell us the whole truth," meaning they will not tell us everything they know. This could be devastating to our national interest, especially during wartime. "Yet almost always, I trust them to tell us nothing but the truth," meaning they will not offer statements intended to deceive. "And as far as governments go, I think this situation is more than good. It's great." Now, I know that there are those of you out there that doubt that IQ tests have any validity. I personally think they do, but when I read Marilyn Vos Savant writing a comment like that, I certainly have my doubts. Well, Marilyn, I'd like to direct your attention to the San Francisco Chronicle, Saturday, March 15th. Article, "Retired agents say data cooked. CIA colleagues urged to come clean on Iraq," by John J. Lumpkin, Associated Press. Washington, "A small group composed mostly of retired CIA officers is appealing to colleagues still inside to go public with any evidence the Bush administration is slanting intelligence to support its cause for war with Iraq." Members contend that the Bush administration has released information on Iraq that meets only its ends while ignoring or withholding contrary reporting. They say that Iraq's threat to the United States and its alleged ties to al-Qaeda are unconvincing, and they accuse policymakers of pushing out some information that does not meet an intelligence professional's standard of proof. Now, CIA analysts are not noted for being an especially dovish bunch, and if they're saying the Bush administration is cooking the books, I think there's an awful lot of credibility to that statement. Now, the Washington Post and CNN were also reporting, and I don't know whether you noticed this, that the intelligence documents that the U.S. and British government said were strong evidence that Iraq was developing nuclear weapons have been discovered to be forgeries. U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell referred to them directly in his presentation to the U.N. Security Council as he outlined the Bush administration's case against Iraq. But it turns out that they are written on paper from the 1980s, bearing the date of October 2000, with the signature of a man who had not been the foreign minister of Niger for 14 years.
Now, also, wasn't there a case of when Tony Blair was delivering his security dossier to Parliament that large portions of that document were actually lifted from a paper written by a graduate student in 1993?
You are correct, sir. So this data that's being highly touted is rather suspect, Ms. Savant. In fact, this caught the attention of the Sacramento Bee. The ombudsman Sanders Lamont commented on March 16th in regard to the Iraqi forgery story that readers were writing in. Reader Ralph Heyman of Davis objected that, quote, a most important story is buried on page 11 and then under a totally misleading headline. The story reported the FBI was investigating forged evidence linking Iraq to a nuclear weapons program. Well, Mr. Lamont, the ombudsman, said, well, you know, it's unfortunate that, you know, sometimes editors just maybe don't put something on the front page, and gee, maybe sometimes it belongs there. Yes, yes, should have been a front page story. Faking data, forging documents.
What a silly oversight, especially when, you know, Survivor and the Michael Jackson interview were on the front pages just a few weeks previous.
Indeed. Now, we noticed that in USA Today, last month, there was an article that I put aside for future reference and future references now. Country Anthem Plays a Drumbeat for War. Country artist Daryl Worley is the first out of the gate with a record that endorses war with Iraq. The top new song on this week's country chart at 43, Have You Forgotten, may seem to equate Saddam Hussein with Osama bin Laden, but the record was striking a chord. It's getting requests all over the country to play. To his credit, Steve Warren, who consults for about 40 country radio stations, wouldn't have applauded, said singing a song about going to war with Saddam because bin Laden hit us is a leap of logic I don't think any informed people outside the White House can make. Warren said, I wouldn't play the thing no matter how many requests I get for the sucker. Well, it's somewhat easy to forgive a country western singer for mistaking Saddam Hussein for bin Laden, but it's, I think, a little less forgivable when the deception can be laid at the White House door. Article, Christian Science Monitor, March 14th, 2003. Linda Feldman, staff writer. In his prime time press conference last week, which focused almost solely on Iraq, President Bush mentioned September 11th 8 times. He referred to Saddam Hussein many more times than that, often in the same breath with September 11th. Bush never pinned blame for attacks directly on the Iraqi president. Still, the overall effect was to reinforce an impression that persists among many of the American public that the Iraqi dictator played a direct role in the attacks. A New York Times CBS poll this week shows that 45% of Americans believe that Mr. Hussein was personally involved in September 11th. Sources knowledgeable about U.S. intelligence say there is no evidence that Hussein played a role in the September 11th attacks, nor that he has been or is currently aiding al-Qaeda. Yet the White House appears to be encouraging this false impression.
Now, Doug, if 47% of Americans support war with Iraq without a U.N. resolution, and 45% of Americans think that Saddam Hussein attacked this country, what does it say about the percentage that support war with Iraq?
Well, you're asking a very good question, young man. Polling data, this article said, right after September 11th, when Americans were asked the open-ended question about who was behind the attacks, 3% mentioned Iraq or Saddam Hussein. By January of this year, attitudes had been transformed. In a Knight Ritter poll, 44% of Americans reported that either most or some of the September 11th hijackers were Iraqi citizens. The correct answer to that question is zero. I hate to say this, but I honestly believe the American public has fallen victim of what are called psychological operations, PSYOPs. You read about these things in conjunction with war efforts and how they want to influence public opinion in attacking countries. You've heard about the leaflets that are being dropped on Iraq. But I think that public relations, or PSYOPs, depending on how you want to look at it, have been directed successfully against the American public. We talked a bit ago about how Hill and Knowlton in 1990 was hired by the Kuwaiti government with U.S. assistance to tell the fabricated story of babies being removed from incubators by Iraqi soldiers to get the public ready for war. It worked in 1990, and apparently association of Saddam Hussein with the September 11th attacks has worked in 2003. Another article I filed away for future reference, and again, future reference is now, dated 10-8-2 out of the Chronicle. It was from John Sugg, senior editor for Creative Loafing, an alternative news weekly based in Atlanta, an essay that I thought was worth going over. Chicken hawks are defined as creatures who belligerently advocate violent military solutions to political problems, but who dodged opportunities to serve in uniform during wartime. Skipping ahead, grand and spectacular war is something which you should be willing to lay down your life for, or that of your children. But among those whom chicken hawks exclude from the holy privilege of horrible death in the battlefield are, well, themselves. Let's just go through a few. George W. Bush. W. lied repeatedly in his 2000 campaign about his service in the Texas Air National Guard. The truth is his family influence got him into the Guard, jumping over 100,000 men on the waiting list. Once in, he disappeared from duty. In military jargon, he went AWOL. Had you or I done that, we would have gone to prison. I can tell you, my flight instructor, an ex-military man, bristles. He's also a Republican. Bristles when he talks about Bush going AWOL on his Air National Guard service. Dick Cheney could have served in Vietnam, but said he had other priorities. John Ashcroft, Attorney General, was engaged in the nationally critical pursuit of teaching business education during Vietnam. Among other administration insiders, Spencer Abraham, Elliot Abrams, Ken Edelman, John Bolton, Andrew Card, Asa Hutchinson, Richard Perle, Paul Wolfowitz, none of these guys apparently saw fit to do service in Vietnam. Among other politicians, Saxby Chambliss, super patriot, Republican from Georgia, all-American guy during Vietnam War, student deferment. Oh, and then a football injury to his knee kept him out. Lamar Alexander, U.S. Senator, didn't serve. Jeb Bush, didn't serve. Representative Tom DeLay, Republican Texas, didn't serve. Phil Graham, Republican Texas, didn't serve. Joe Lieberman, Democrat Connecticut, also didn't serve. Among bloodthirsty pundits, none of the following managed to see service in Vietnam. Roger Ailes, Wolf Blitzer, Sean Hannity, Charles Krauthammer, Bill O'Reilly, George Will, or Rush Limbaugh. And among women, the blood and guts Barbie doll columnist Ann Coulter, who among other things has advocated killing all Arab leaders and forcibly converting their citizens to Christianity, is in the age bracket of Desert Storm veterans, but never risked her own behind. And one extra word on Richard Perle, the administration's leading hawk, a man who we told you about a few months ago, a man who has an office in the Pentagon right down the hall, apparently from Secretary of State Donald Rumsfeld, very influential person in directing policy. Well, he also apparently is cutting some deals with Saudi businessmen to sell arms. Seymour Hersh nailed Mr. Perle on the March 17th issue of The New Yorker. After which, Richard Perle has threatened to sue. Well, not exactly. He's threatened to sue, maybe, next week in England. He's apparently searching for a venue. The English laws on libel impose the burden on defendants to prove truth or justification, whereas in America, the law places the burden of proof on the plaintiff to show that the statement is false. So in Slate magazine, Jack Schaefer pretty much said, "Put up or shut up, Richard Pearl," stating, "I double dare him to sue Seymour Hersh," referring to Pearl as a grandstanding panty waste. Schaefer points out that, "I'm going to punch you in the nose" is a serious threat. "I'm going to punch you in the nose tomorrow or the day after" carries less urgency. But to stipulate, "I'm going to punch you in the nose next week in England where I'm looking to hire a professional nose puncher," is a sort of statement that only a grandstanding panty waste would make. I think we will proceed with our pre-recorded interview with White House spokesman Yuri Fleischman. Mr. Fleischman, sir, critics compare a U.S. war against Iraq to prior invasions in history, ones that also ran counter to international law.
"We feel we are acting in accordance with international law. Nations are permitted to defend themselves, are they not?"
"Yes."
"Well, we're doing just that."
"Defending ourselves?"
"Yes."
"By starting the war?"
"Well, look, often the best defense is a good offense."
"I see."
"And this administration will defend, defend, defend."
"By attacking?"
"Well, it's just prudent. Look, if Saddam is permitted to grow stronger, our danger increases. Must we stand by as he gains new and ever more powerful weapons? Perhaps even phasers or photon torpedoes?"
Don't those belong to the realm of science fiction?"
Well, that's what many have said about Star Wars. I mean, you know, the Strategic Defense Initiative."
"Well, accurately, perhaps."
"It is a fantastically futuristic idea, granted. But we have committed billions to it."
"So we fear that he's as nuts as we are."
"Look, a missile shield is expensive, but we feel it would let very, very few nuclear rockets rain down on America if we could just get some of the bugs out. But my point was, if we want peace, then we must bomb."
"Bomb for peace?"
"Unfortunately, yes."
"But isn't bombing for peace like fornicating for chastity?"
"We feel it's time to give armed conflict a chance."
"Well, how is a war in which the U.S. is the aggressor different from Hitler going against Poland in 1939? He claimed he was forced to invade, too."
"Douglas, it's totally different."
"How?"
"Well, first of all, Mr. Bush doesn't have a mustache. Second of all, we do not fear a Polish attack. We fear an Iraqi attack. There's a big difference."
"Well, how about Japanese reasoning at Pearl Harbor?"
"I fail to see a correlation there."
"Well, attack first before an enemy moves against you. Isn't it the same logic?"
"And the president also fails to see a correlation."
"Not surprising."
"And Vice President Cheney, he doesn't see a correlation either."
"But the rest of the world does, sir."
"Secretary Powell and Secretary Rumsfeld, they fail to see it too. In fact, no administration official admits seeing this correlation."
"I see."
"And you underestimate the wide breadth of our coalition, Douglas."
"Well,
may I mention that?
In 1991, France fought with us."
"Yes."
"Russia went along. Egypt and Syria joined."
"Okay."
"There were no UN vetoes. Germany wasn't resisting."
"Well,
demonstrations were not rampant throughout the world, and dozens of nations cooperated in that operation."
"Names may change, but we still have many nations with us this time. Many nations."
"Who?"
"A whole slew of nations, a panoply of nations."
"Who?"
"Well, Spain. Spain is offering us all the olive oil we need. And Bulgaria, don't forget them."
"That's two."
"Gibraltar supports us."
"You can't count Gibraltar."
"They're like a rock. Look, why can't I count them? Gibraltar has monitored Iraqi ships passing by."
"Have they seen any?"
"Not one. With their vigilance, Saddam doesn't dare try anything sneaky. And by the way, England, Wales, Scotland, and Northern Ireland, they're all acting as one unified entity behind us."
"Well, that's because they are one unified entity. They're the United Kingdom. You're counting each political division of the UK separately?"
"Well, wouldn't you? I mean, the more the merrier, you know. And the Shetland Islands are with us, by the way. And the Orkneys."
"Don't forget the Isle of Man."
"Good point. That's 10. And the Falkland Islands owe us. They'll make 11, for sure."
"Who else you got?"
"We got Australia."
"What about Tasmania?"
"Good point. They're standing with the Aussies and us, I'm happy to report. We're up to 13 now."
"You're cheating, Mr. Fleischman."
"Puerto Rico, they stand behind us. Taiwan will back us. And Swaziland, let's not forget them. Of course, the Aleutian Islands are also solid."
"The Aleutians are part of Alaska."
"Makes them very dependable allies, does it not? That's 17. And we're negotiating with many countries, Doug, such as, Lesotho, Togo, Equatorial Guinea, the Turks, and the Caicos Islands, Albania, Togo, Montserrat, Suriname, Chad, Namibia, Vanuatu, I believe it's called, Grenada, Togo, and Mongolia. That makes 30 right there, and Liechtenstein. How can I forget them?
You counted Togo 3 times.
Well, we like Togo.
Turkey is resisting you on the use of their airspace, sir.
Which is why Liechtenstein's airspace is so important.
But Liechtenstein's only 15 miles across.
Yes, but we can hover there if we need to.
What about the forged documents of Saddam buying uranium from Niger?
Well, what about them?
Supposedly signed by a foreign minister who hadn't held office for 14 years.
Well, you know, you're nitpicking now. I mean, look, intelligence is sometimes more art than science.
They had a bogus signature of the president of Niger that was childishly crude, yet Mr. Bush cited this document in his State of the Union address as proof of Saddam's bad intentions.
Oh, well, you know, nobody's perfect.
But many Americans think that Saddam has nuclear weapons.
Exactly. Can you prove he doesn't?
No, but your evidence that he may includes obvious forgeries.
Well, you know, better some evidence than none. That's what I always say.
Even phony data?
Look. Let me just give you the bottom line here. You're either for us or against it, and we'll reward those who are with us, believe me.
With bribes?
The United States does not bribe. After we clean house with the axis of evil, we may go after other rogue states, Libya, Cuba, even Palestine.
Palestine has no state.
Well, we can give them one, then we'll invade. We're keeping our options open. Look, you know, naysayers who say we can't invade a country and set things right don't remember Panama.
But they do perhaps remember Vietnam, Laos, or Cambodia.
Well, those countries had way too much rainforest. We learned our lesson of history, Doug. We don't attack forestry places anymore. Deserts, plains, and dry hills, that's what we like now.
Well, it sure saves on the defoliant.
Well, you bet it does.
Korea is still unsettled 50 years after their truce.
We're going to do an axis of evil cleanup. Forget North Korea.
Well, South Korea isn't so happy with us either.
Well, you know, they're right down the peninsula from Pyongyang. We'll just invade there, too, if they get too persnickety.
We already did, sir.
Oh, well, I guess so, huh, yeah.
Are there any countries we can categorically say we will not invade now?
I can categorically say we will absolutely, positively not invade the Vatican, we will not invade Iceland, and we won't go into Costa Rica.
Why them?
No armies. Why waste troops?
Really?
Just kidding. Look, we'll invade wherever and whenever the need arises. This should be made clear. It's the new Bush
France?
Doctrine, but only in accordance with international law.
Meaning?
If we perceive an imminent threat to our interests, real or theoretical.
Well, that narrows it down.
Look, we'll be very fair in making that determination, by the way. Scrupulous.
The nations of the world will sleep better knowing that.
They should. Nations need not fear us, Douglas, so long as they simply do not attack us, menace us, threaten us, rival us, irk us, taunt us, or look at us sideways, they have nothing to fear.
Well, thank you, Mr. Yuri Fleischman.
You're most welcome.
For those of you in doubt, that was known as satire. You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM. This is Radio Parallax. I am Douglas Everett, joined by my co-host today, Stephen Valentino, who will return in our second segment after these messages.
To me.